This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
This is the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast, episode number 16. Hey, and welcome to the iFanboy Pick of the Week podcast for comic books that came out the week of February 1st, 2006. My name is Ron, and I'm here with Josh.
Hello.
And Connor.
Hi, Ron.
Hey, Connor. And we are here to tell you about Connor's Pick of the Week on iFanboy.com. Every week we take a look at all the comics that come out and read them and review them. And
not all of them.
Not all of them.
That would be ridiculous.
A select few.
No one can afford that. But rich people.
And we each take turns. We each take turns writing up what we thought of them. And this week it was Connor's turn. And Connor, why don't you tell us about what you picked?
Well, this is a sad day for some and a happy day for others. Most
Who's
likely
happy about this,
Ron.
Oh, I wouldn't say I'm happy. I'm indifferent.
He's not that evil.
Yeah, I know. I'm not. I don't relish enjoyment in your losing one of your favorite books.
You know who's happy about it? Rich
Who?
People.
Gotham Continue. Central has ended. This is the final issue of Gotham Central, so I picked it as my pick of the week, Gotham Central number 40. Not because this issue is particularly great, but more as the celebration of the entire book as a whole, which really came out of nowhere these last few years to be a really, really great book. It was one of our favorite books overall, not counting Ron. And
I read the first two trades. If there was a third trade, I would buy it.
Okay.
So I warmed to it.
It's been a tough 1-2 punch because last week we lose Bendis' run on Daredevil, and now we're losing Gotham Central. And for me, those were the top two books of 2005. So now I don't know where to turn for good comics.
You have nothing to look forward to next week, do you?
I have no reason to get out of bed in the morning. this was the wrap-up for the series and for the storyline that involved the shooting of one of the main characters. And Josh, you read this book today, right?
Yep. About 10 minutes ago.
it ended rather abruptly and on an unresolved note, but I thought after thinking about it that it really fits with the series.
I saw that you wrote that, and you're absolutely right, because the fact is, you know, a murder will go unsolved, you know, somewhere between 50% and 75% of the time, or 50% and 25% of the time, so why should this be any different, since what was good about it was that it was authentic.
Right, and sometimes the killer gets away, even when the crime is solved.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the great things about the book, is it's planted firmly in the gray zone. A lot of superhero books are black and white.
See, that wasn't. I mean, they still didn't say it wasn't. He didn't get acquitted.
No, but normally you're thinking,
yeah,
when one of the main characters is killed and they arrest the suspect in the same issue, you're going to get a resolution. And then there wasn't one, and I was shocked by it, but then oddly satisfied by it at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't want to go into the particulars of the storyline, just the overall effect of the book, which is why I picked it as pick of the week. It was something when it was first announced I was really looking forward to. Greg Rucka and Ed Brubaker were the writers who were going to hand off storylines, and at the time, two of the top writers in DC on the Batman books. So it fit their.
Those were the glory days.
Yeah, those were the good times. It fit in their whole niche was the Bat Universe, and this fit in terms of the gritty crime stories that it does independently and at Brubaker also, but it also straddles the Batman line. So it was able to handle both worlds, sort of the indie realistic world and the superhero world at the same time, and it did it really well, I thought. Mm-hmm. And I'm mildly surprised it made it this far, to be honest with you. It was always talked about as possibly canceled.
It wasn't canceled because it was canceled. I mean, it got to the point where I think Rucka was going to get off of it, and he didn't want anybody else on it. He didn't want it to get wrecked or anything. So he ended it. I mean, he put it down like his favorite dog.
I know very little about the book, so bear with me, but I know today we were talking about it on the site. Like, isn't one of the characters going to be a key thing in the next 52 event at DC? Like, isn't Montoya getting her own book?
What's this
supposedly,
now?
I don't know anything about
event?
It.
Yeah, so supposedly Montoya is one of the key, or like there are six books that are coming out in around the post-Infinite Crisis, and I read Montoya was one of them. Well, so I guess that they're going to continue it in some regard.
That's a big matzo ball hanging out there that they left.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way that you could editorially not do anything about that unless it was Ed Brubaker's Dead Enders, which they did to him. But that
besides the fact that Montoya's been around for years and years and years and years, has been a major third-tier character in the Batman world. Mm-hmm. Just to have her drop off like she did, quit, you know, emotionally devastated, quitting the force and just walk out the door, I really can't see them just leaving that be. So
that's prime Rucka territory, though.
Right.
Is that how it ended?
Yeah. Sorry.
Well, then that probably leads right into her having her own book.
Fantastic. Well, she quit the force. Although, see, now I don't want her to become like she's a cop.
Alias.
Yeah, I don't want that, and I don't want whatever hero for hire DC side whatever.
Blah blah blah.
Well, that begs the question: what came first, the decision to end the book and have her quit, and then? Oh, let's give her her own book, or we're giving Montoya a book, so she's going to have to leave the force.
Well,
honestly, I think it's probably because of the event.
Yeah.
I mean, just from what...
I don't necessarily buy the notion that he ended it on his own entirely.
Right. It's nice to think that he did, like similar to Bendis just walking away or whatever, but or Bendis ending Alias or whatnot, but... I mean, to me as a casual DC person who's only read the first two trades, to see the six books that are being profiled for the 52 event, and one of them is entitled Montoya and sixth character from this book, it just seems too coincidental that he chose to end it and then they grabbed the character and did this with it and made it a big portion of it.
Which is odd, because this is not a huge book sales buy, so it's not
not
like
at all.
Rolling out of some success into some other big thing.
Right.
You know, not like they came out of Alias with Pulse. It's not
when you saw the solicitation, did they say who was writing it?
No, but I can check. I can find out.
We know who it's going to be. Come on. There's no way that's any other than Rucka.
Right in his wheelhouse. It's the strong female character that's troubled.
Yeah. Who's really tough and can kick your ass. He's really gotten away with doing that a lot without being called a hack, by the way.
Isn't that funny?
It's
he does
very
it really
strange.
Well.
He does it every single time, though.
Yeah, he does.
And the only thing he didn't do that in was his little run on Wolverine, and that did have one strong, tough woman, but she happened to be the criminal.
Well, he did it somewhat when he did the Detective Comics, but he couldn't have her overshadow Batman, so she was regulated to the side.
But she was always there, and she came from out of nowhere.
Right.
And I liked her, and I didn't mind, and those were great, great comics. But he does it all the time.
While Ron continues to surf the web, I would say that...
he's gotten off track by this point, by the way. He's like, ooh, Link, click, click.
Pornography. One of the other great things about this book is that...
Oh, come on.
You didn't need to say
it. You don't like boobs? one of the great things about this book is you don't get a lot of comics that are set in the superhero world that focus on people that aren't superheroes. Mm-hmm. And last for, you know, more than a miniseries. And make it interesting and compelling. And this is one of the things that this book did.
Do you remember Gordon of Gotham?
I do.
That was great. And
yeah,
I think that was a precursor to this book in a way.
Well, absolutely. Probably the success of that book helped a lot.
Oh, that was so good.
And it seems to be something that only they really can pull off in the Batman area.
Yeah, for some reason. You know what was something nice they also did was there was a transition of the artist in the middle of this book.
Mm-hmm.
And if I hadn't had it pointed out to me, I may not have noticed.
Oh, from...
They changed the artist in mid-page?
No, but like mid-run. I mean, it was a very consistent arc, and what they did was they found two people with similar styles that sort of... And the tone didn't really shift at all.
No.
And it's a very unique tone. It's a very... It doesn't look like a lot of other books. It's very
grounded in reality.
Yeah, very much so.
Even though it exists in a fantastic world, it's very non-fantastical. Even when the superheroes show up, they're not like... It's not...
It really is that feeling of someone standing around in a room with everybody looking at them, and they look odd because they're dressed in some gaudy outfit or something like that.
Right.
It was the one episode where the Titans showed up everywhere, and they were the ones who looked out of place.
Tonally, it straddled a very fine line, and I thought it did it well for the entire run.
Aye.
Any luck there, Ron, or...?
He's got no idea. I was looking through the past picks, and we've picked this book, I think, 9 times out of 40 issues.
And it could have easily been picked more.
Yeah, just, Ron had a third of the picks, so...
Well, I'm looking, and all I can find right now is just to mention that The Question, Rene Montoya, Elongated Man, Booster Gold, Black Adam, Steel, and Lex Luthor will be major players in 52. And that's where I remember. I think it was in Wizard, and it's downstairs, and I can grab it later and look, whatever. But
yeah,
I remember Ron
Dry's Wizard, by the way.
Yeah, I do. It's one of those things I just can't stop doing. I don't know why. And I buy it, and I get so angry at it, and I throw it down, and then I go back to it, and then I...
You're like an abused wife.
What can't you do to it?
Anyway.
Can't quit Wizard. Why can't you quit Wizard?
So, I remember looking in the most recent issue, and they had the covers to Steel and Booster Gold and Black Adam, and one was Montoya. But I don't know who wrote it. So, we'll find out. I'm sure, I really would not be surprised if it was Rucka. It has to be Rucka.
Yep.
You know?
I would think so. Can't duck that question, though. Why do you still buy Wizard?
Because there are no comic book magazines that are worth reading.
But
I bought the Comics Journal before, and I bought I've bought other things, and sometimes I like to go spend some time on in the bathroom and read about comics, and sometimes they do. And the thing is, every once in a while,
it just got ugly in here.
It did get ugly, and I'm sorry.
It got ugly.
But
quick.
you pushed for
it. Took it to a dirty place.
But the thing is that like every once in a while there'll be like a couple of years ago they had a great article on Crazy Jim Steranko. Nobody's writing an article on Crazy Jim Steranko. But
I bet if you search the web you could find it.
Yeah, I'm sure. But
what purpose do they serve now that there's Newsarama?
Well, you see, that's the thing, and it's funny because the thing about Wizard, and this happened a couple of weeks ago and really got me kind of, not mad, but just more laughing, is that they are so deep in the pockets of Marvel and DC now, and the fact that they're a magazine, so they need to work on a certain production schedule, so it's not nearly to the timeliness of a website like Newsarama or even our site. We break news often before it's in Wizard.
Right.
Not that we break news, but we talk about
news. We did a couple of times.
We did. We had our moments of in the sun.
When the Riddler died, we had a picture up immediately.
That's true. And so, we did break that.
Yes, we did. Oh, Frank! Moment of silence for Frank Gorshin.
And we're on.
Right. But what I think is interesting, this started happening a couple of years ago, is that they'd be writing stories now that would appear in their magazine 2-3 months down the road, and they weren't timely. So what do? They turn around to Marvel and DC, said, we're not timely anymore. Tell us what's coming so we can make sure it hits at the same time. Okay, that's great. That's such a, like a marketing business guy conference room idea, but what's the problem with that?
I don't know,
Wizard
Mr.
sucks.
Comics rarely come out on time.
Ah.
So what you get is me in the bathroom reading Wizard, and I find out that Hawkeye died
in
Can't Avengers.
Can't you just tell us it's on the couch? How hard is that?
But anyway, I find out that Hawkeye's dead in the Avengers that's coming out next week.
Well,
so
whose fault is that?
Wait, Hawkeye's dead? Screw this.
And we lost Josh.
He loves to throw down his mic and walk away. Joke. It's like the third time you've done it.
I love that.
I know.
I wish I really had the. I don't know what it's going to do to your speakers to actually throw it, so I haven't done it yet, but I just sort of jostled the mic.
I think we thank you for that.
Yeah, we thank you.
But all for somebody I've heard, you know, rant and rave about how awful Wizard is, so I can't believe you still hand them your cash every month.
I like the magazines.
How much is it?
I don't know. It's like maybe $4, maybe.
$4 a month for how many years?
Since 91.
Oh, my God.
And they're all in the basement with every other Entertainment Weekly.
Pray for Flame.
You're nuts.
Oh, yeah. Okay, let me lose my house. That'd be great.
I meant the magazines, not your home. That would be
great. Pray for Controlled Flame.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Controlled Burn.
But regardless, I saw in Wizard that there's a book called Montoya. So
we went a long way around for that one.
We did.
I think it's around here somewhere.
Well, so, I think we've beaten Gotham Central to death in the podcast, so we don't really need to spend an hour on it. So say it's been a great run, a great book, a book that really was unexpectedly good, and I'm sorry to see it go.
If they ever finish printing the trades, you should buy it. And yeah. I just as a closing note, I think one of the downfalls of it all is for some reason DC, which puts out trades all the time, didn't get behind this for that.
No.
They released one and then waited a really long time to release a second, and that's all there is. And I've talked to several retailers who have just said, you know, that's a problem.
Which is, you know, it's silly because Gotham Central sort of caters to the audience of people who tend to buy things in trades.
So it would seem.
And you'd think they'd want to recoup their money and sell to those people. But they
don't.
And
they would sell to them, too.
Absolutely they would sell.
Yeah. You can do.
Stupid. I have one more quick note of books this month before... this week before we spread out a little bit. And that is... next month starts the one-year-later DC event. So all these books are wrapping up this month. Aquaman wrapped up this week. And we can refrain from all Aquaman jokes for now. And
so what? They drained the tank. Or...
Yes, there's no more water. He was very thirsty. So, before I started the media blackout on the 1 year later stuff, I read about Aquaman and Kurt Busiek is writing it. And
wait, you have to close your eyes and put your hands over your ears and just go media blackout, media blackout, media blackout. Whenever we talk about it now,
I do. I,
you know what? I'm vetoing that.
Well, Ron did that for Star Wars, and it was lots of fun.
for 5 years.
And I mean awful. and basically, when Aquaman restarts, it's not going to be Arthur as Aquaman. And Kurt was saying some tragic event was going to cause this to happen, and the tragic event, I think, was revealed at the end of this issue, where Aquaman tosses Black Manta into a pool of sharks. He's tired of fighting him. He's tired of going around in circles with him. So he just takes him and throws him into a bunch of sharks. And
that's kind of the catch all in Aquaman. If you've got a problem, sharks.
And the whole time, Black Manta's convinced he's fine. That Aquaman would never let him die. You know, he's a hero. He wouldn't let the sharks eat him. And then Aquaman just swims away. And you see a shark coming up to chomp on Black Manta, and that's the last of that.
I want to see
so
the
Black
next
Manta's
frame.
Dead.
No, see, because you didn't see it.
Well, it's off panel.
I want to see the next frame. I want to see Quint get eaten. We got to see Quint get swallowed. I want to see Black Manta get swallowed. Which I don't. Stabbing him in the nose. You bastard.
So that was interesting. I wasn't expecting that. And now I believe Ron has something to say about this week's comics.
Oh, yeah. Well, I did not. Oddly enough, I didn't get any DC books because. Oh, no. I got Green Lantern, actually.
It doesn't really?
Which was decent. No, it was actually decent.
Somebody on the
bad.
Site said it was getting better, too.
Yeah, no, well, because the artist who, Van Sciver, is off, and it's been Carlos Pacheco.
Let me tell you something. It wasn't the art that was the problem.
Yeah, no, I had I didn't like it. I didn't like his art at all. But the first arc,
that
art,
was not,
I did not like.
That was not even close to being.
No, I know
problem.
It wasn't the problem. But this has been pretty good. He's got Green Arrow, and it's been. It was,
oh,
it,
they
it
went
was,
to that
it was
well.
Pretty decent. Yeah, and next issue is Batman.
They're going to that anyway. Well. It's like Wolverine dropping in on Spider-Man.
Or anything.
But anyway, I did pick up
One more point. Oddly enough, you didn't buy any DC books.
Yeah.
Let's try as per usual. I didn't buy any DC books.
Well, that was with a hint of irony.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So, but I did pick up X-Factor number 3, which everybody knows is my quickly favorite.
That was really
book
good.
Put in. It was really good, wasn't it? It sprung back from issue two pretty quickly.
I must be blind to the X books because I probably would have gotten it, but I just don't see it.
Do you have one of those blocks where you can't?
I might just skip over that whole section. I just go. I'm like, okay, here's the DC stuff. Here's the Avengers stuff, and there's some other stuff, and there's Image.
So you go to the comic book store and you miss Gotham Central and you have to go back and get it today and read it 10 minutes ago. You missed the X books.
Dedication, like, by the way.
How long were you in the store? Like four minutes.
I went at about 2 p.m. on a Wednesday.
And you were there till like 4:30.
I went at 2 p.m. on a Wednesday. I was there a while, but it was packed. There's lots and lots of people.
When you go to the store, do you have any sort of supplies? Do you bring a list of any sort?
How do we shop for our books every week? Because I know Connor writes a list.
I make
a
list because I got a poor memory.
Right. And what I do is I count how many books I want, and I don't make a list. I don't bring a list, but I know the number that I'm trying to match. And if this week I was going to buy 8 books, and if I had 7, then I knew I was missing something, and I go back and look again.
You have nice systems. That's good.
I stumble around like
a
drunk.
My last guy used to send out an email on Mondays. And you would send a list back to him.
Oh, that's so nice. Why'd you break up with him?
He's too far away.
I know.
Why you gotta do that?
I'm sorry.
and so I kind of had an idea of what it was gonna be, and if I didn't show up on Wednesday, which was most weeks, he'd just have them, so didn't really have to worry about it. And then when I switched, I got there, and what they do is they have a little piece of cardboard under all the new books that's saying new. I just go around. There's only sort of 2 rows of stuff, and I just go through there and I look at all the new ones and I pick the ones I need. But I found out that when you go there at like 2:00 on a Wednesday afternoon in Burbank, apparently none of the comics readers have jobs. There's 100 of them.
I would recommend a list.
That's very timely.
Yeah.
Just get a little post-it note, write the comics on there, slap it on your wallet. You're good to go.
Or some sort of number or something, just some sort of guide so you know what you're looking for.
You know what? I don't mind having to go back. Except there was like a $10 minimum for credit card fees. I went back today and I had to get Gotham Central. Well, that was like $2.50, so I had to find like a low price trade.
Oh, jeez.
I bought season 1 of Hard Time, which I also read this week.
Oh, yeah, which I keep on wanting to get, but I keep forgetting
to get. It's like $10. It was good. I was going to buy Godland, but it's completely sold out everywhere apparently.
Interesting.
Well, it's too bad you missed X Factor 3 because it was really good.
Yeah, it was good. And go back and buy another $10 worth of books and pick it up. But the reason why I wanted to briefly talk about it is because I know one of our complaints last month when it was out was aside from the art being kind of hard to follow, which I didn't have that problem at all. This issue was with the character Layla Miller, who was going around saying that she knows stuff and what's the deal with it. I had an aha moment. In the book, which I think was on purpose.
It was on the toilet, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't.
Good. Good answer.
In the book, somebody has broken into the X-Factor's agency, and a detective agency, and thinks that Richter is a problem to their plan and is going to kill him, but she stops him. And when she stops him, she's talking to him, kind of giving exposition, and she's explaining that that she has to keep the people at X Factor from finding out the truth about what really happened. And so I said, wait a minute, what does that mean? And then I kind of had an aha moment and remembered that back in House of M, which, Josh, I know you love to hear me talk about, the character that triggered all the heroes' memories coming back and then them stopping this Scarlet Witch was a little blonde girl named Layla Miller, who would look at the heroes. Scooby-Doo noise. Would look at the heroes and make them remember what life was like. So whether Layla Miller is a creation of the Scarlet Witch, and in House of M she was there to help them to make them trigger the heroes' memories to stop her from doing what she was doing, and if she's a creation of the Scarlet Witch now to keep them from finding out what she did, I don't know. But this is the single tie back to House of M that is existing in all the X-Men books. So X-Factor has quickly become a very important book in the X-Men world because this one character is kind of holding the key to kind of the big mystery of what happened to all the mutants.
Also, we said she was really kind of funny that first time, but we could easily get old.
Yep.
She goes real dark in this one.
Yeah,
and her whole tagline, I'm Layla Miller, I know stuff, it's not funny anymore.
Happened
it's
once.
Not funny
it
anymore,
happened,
and when she does say it, it's chilling.
Yeah. And so but the reason why I want to talk about it aside from, giving you guys the background because I know you didn't read House of M was I'm really kind of mad at myself that I didn't pick up on this in the first or second issue, because she said her name like a gazillion times.
Drops the ball.
And I read House of M, but it's just like, I just read too many comics. And
among other things.
House of M happened too long ago, and I just didn't remember that that happened. And so it was kind of, you know, kind of damn all these comics.
Okay, here's one way to fix that problem. Stop reading Wizard.
Yeah.
Stop buying Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Stop buying. I'm sure there's 100 other ones that you.
Right. Well, anyway, but so I finally kind of.
Anyways, no.
I finally kind of remembered and went back to House of M and flipped and just confirmed that her name was Layla Miller, and indeed she was much younger in House of M, though. She was like a little girl, and well, in this she's a teenager. But so I thought that was important. And then the other thing also was that I thought, I mean, for whatever reason, every scene that Peter David writes Madrox in is gold as far as script goes, as far as the dialogue. I mean, when he was talking to Siren and about, you know, talking about how the memories he gets from his dupes, his duplicates and stuff like that, that in the beginning.
He doesn't know what he's done and what they've done, and it makes it hard because you don't know what, you don't have your own memories.
Right, yeah.
It's good.
It was really good. It was really, really good.
This is like old school, really kick-ass Peter David.
Yeah, which is great. I just hope it sticks with it.
This is not like phony and jokey Peter David.
Yeah. So that was a great read this week, and I was pleased to get that. A lot of X books this week.
That's a shocker.
Surprise, surprise. But I do know that we all read Powers.
That was what I was about to go for.
Go for it, Josh.
Wow.
Tee it up.
You know what? You gotta love how he goes balls out with this thing.
It's true.
He'll
go anywhere
for a long
he wants.
Time. Yeah, he will. And Emming is always right there with just ridiculous artwork. I don't mean that in a bad way.
No, Emming's powerhouse.
I mean, but just these huge, huge scapes of all the stuff that's happening. And he'll go so far as, you know, he'll do that one black page where there's nothing going on.
Yeah.
And that takes, you know, you've got to have a patient kind of fan base to be able to do that, I think. But obviously, what seems to be happening here is that Walker's now going to be a superhero again.
I got another point about Powers.
Go ahead.
iFanboy's own Toga opens the book up.
Anybody? Is it?
Anyone?
I gotcha.
Is this mic on?
It's a lady with a
douche, douche.
I was like, well, I don't know what she looks like, because I was like, this is Francine. But it's a girl with a filthy, filthy mouth. No.
Yeah, it is. Yeah.
That's what made me think
she's
of.
She's open and comfortable with herself.
Our very own Toga.
That's what I thought.
Well, my thought with this book was that this is really this has kind of been building for a little while. But this, as much as this is a superhero book, it's also a science fiction book.
Yes,
I thought it was a cop book.
It's a cop book. It's a science fiction book, and
it's crossing over all these different genres.
Cool. I've learned to trust him, and I don't really. I'm not worried about where it's going. But at the same time, I can't imagine this is going to just turn into him as a superhero book. Because
it'll go somewhere.
Yeah.
But the problem with trusting him is, it's not that you ever get burned, at least in Powers. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you got to go through 3 months of monkeys.
Yep, exactly. Because now the 3 months of monkeys makes sense. At least it was referenced.
It was paid off, but at the same time, the journey was rough. Yeah.
And you know what? Yeah, remember it.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, if I was an artist and I, you know, I'd want to do a comic with the people who are still talking about 5 years later, however much later it is.
I still remember the first time that issue came out. And what's all the monkey sex?
It was that I see that one panel. Like, I
monkey
can't
fucking,
they drew
the?
That.
but it was good. It was this arc is really proving to be interesting. So
yep. But it's great how it just keeps changing and growing and moving and doing what it does. And now basically what you have is the two cops who were just regular folks are now
superheroes.
Both super powered people. I guess.
Yeah. Except for some reason, I get the feeling that Walker will be fine and Dina is going to be in trouble. Mm. So, because she killed somebody.
But also, Dina.
That I really want to see what happens with that.
Dina's life, but it seems like it's dark and you expect it to go badly.
I still haven't figured out the significance of the opening and closing sections, though.
It'll pay off.
I know. They don't seem to relate to it. They don't. Like, are they going to keep going?
Yeah.
That's Toga.
All right. Well, anyway, so that about wraps up this week's comics. So right around Christmas, the three of us had a homework assignment.
Throw the headset down.
Good. That was fun. I must admit.
Yeah, there you go.
So we had a homework assignment, which involved purchasing and reading the graphic novel Tricked by Alex Robinson. From Top
Josh, you
want to
recap that whole adventure in that 20 words or less?
Go.
I read Box Office Poison, Alex Robinson's first book, and I read it really quickly, and I loved it. We did an interview with him, and he was a big fan, one of my favorite graphic novels ever. And so I was anxiously awaiting his follow-up novel for probably 3 or 4 years, and then it came out, and I completely missed it, which we discussed on this podcast. And so
for about six months, they made fun of me.
Even though it was referenced in Time Magazine and Wired and The Village Voice.
And Entertainment Weekly.
The best thing ever released.
We're caught up now, though. That's the past.
So we all went out and bought it, and we all read it, and now we're going to take a couple of minutes to talk about it in this podcast.
Josh, since you have a man crush on Alex Robinson, you can start us off.
No, his work.
Right.
He has nice eyes, though. You know what? I think that what I learned by reading this was, I don't know if his art has evolved so much. I think it was it's impressive in its simplicity. It's one of those ones where you look at it first and it seems really simple, but then, you know, you can see there are panels and pages in here where you're just like, wow, that's really well thought out, and it's taken a lot of time, and he's got a lot of techniques down.
There's definitely some intricate design work.
Definitely. And, you know, his facial expressions are good, and one of the things that I've always said that I really love about him that he continued in this is that he draws people they're cartoonish, but they are as they are. Like the people are chubby or skinny or but there's not that idealized human form that you get so often. And, you know, he draws them naked and clothed, and it's not lascivious at all. It's like, okay, this is what people look like.
It's just honest.
And
right?
to me, like, that says, like, he went to art school and he did figure drawing, and like he sees the body as it actually is, and that's always really interesting.
Let's back it up a second and just give a quick synopsis of what Tricked is.
It's hard to explain without, I think, giving a lot of it away. But what basically it is it starts out with several stories of people whose lives seem completely unconnected and disparate. And as the book goes on, you see them all sort of colliding together.
Five parallel stories?
Yeah. Parallel stories, and they take a long time to come together, and it's probably a while before you see that they're going to. I hope I'm not giving anything away by that. But there's, like, the rock star who was really famous, and now he has no idea what he's doing. And then there's Caprice, who actually is the holdover from Box Office Poison, and she's, like, regular girl with a regular life. And there's a guy who is a little too thinky.
The crazy guy?
Yeah, crazy guy.
Crazy guy obsessed with the rock star?
Yeah. And there's all these sort of characters.
Criminal guy?
Yeah. This criminal guy who lives the suburban life. I'm trying not to give everything away, and Connor just keeps going.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just the characters on the cover of the book. It's not like...
Sure. But I think one of the fun things going into this for me was I had no idea about anything. I didn't know what the plot was. I didn't know anything. And so I just kept going.
I had sort of an opposite reaction. The whole time I read the book, I had this feeling of deja vu I could not shake. And it really drove me mad reading the book, that I felt like I'd read sections of it before.
Mm-hmm. I had the same problem.
And I looked back, and there is a section of it that had appeared in another work of his. One of the Caprice scenes, she's one of the characters, she's a waitress, where she confronts her ex. That was published in a previous book of his that I have.
We picked it up at the Comic-Con.
Yeah.
He did it
that
as
must
his,
be it, yeah.
He but did it as his, like, I'm proving I'm working on something.
Right, but that feeling never left through the entire series, and I kept feeling like I'd read
that
it.
That really bothered me, too. It really bothered me.
And it really
me.
And it drove me,
it didn't last
it drove
from,
me out of the story a lot. Just
really? Because
it drove me it so mad I had to go look through books to find this stuff.
Did you find it?
Well, I found the one.
Well, that's all there was.
Yeah, but it just never left. And I felt like the ending, I'd read the ending before, and I felt like the criminal character, the guy just... fakes things. He's not a violent criminal, but a criminal. I felt like I'd read that entire storyline before somewhere.
I can see why you'd think that Tricked would have that feeling of deja vu. That while I think it was very original for a graphic novel, I will say the story felt a little bit like it had been done, but I'd never seen it done in this form. But you know, there were character archetypes and everything that felt a little familiar, and sort of once you see where it goes to, it doesn't really feel new, but it does feel like A, something I haven't seen in the graphic novel, and B, something that's far beyond sort of where he was before. The pacing was very strong, the structure of everything was strong, it was clearly thought out ahead of time. It was a big leap from where Box Office Poison was, I think, as a person who's writing and drawing a graphic novel.
Definitely strong structurally.
Yeah, and I think that his growth and progression is obvious in that, you know, like Box Office Poison was a single issue comic book that was then collected as the graphic novel, and did far better as the graphic novel than it did as the single as the initial release.
Obviously,
but you know, and he obviously wrote this specifically for the graphic novel format with the chapters and with the, you know, kind of knowing that it would be one kind of tome like book, and that kind of growth approach, like Josh said, is obvious in it. So.
The Box Office Poison also felt a lot like it was a lot of autobiographical stuff. Like he put a lot of his own life in there. It felt like he was getting, you know, sort of his mid-20s out, you know, like all that. Whereas this seems more like an attempt to tell a story outside of his own life.
Right. And the thing about it is that like I really like the story aspect. I think that's the strongest thing, and that's, you know, usually what I look for, and I can normally look over kind of, you know, not that great art, but there's something about his artistic style that just bugs me in a way that it's not that I don't like it, but it's just that it's not my favorite. You know, it's a little too kind of rounded faced, you know, round nose, cartoon cherub like kind of drawing.
Well, he's a cartoonist. I mean, that's how he's not a comic book artist. He's not, you know, he's not Alan Davis. He's a cartoonist.
Right. Nice way to drop Alan Davis.
Bam.
Nice.
You like that?
Yeah.
It's not George Perez either. Anyway.
but the thing is that like, and I understand that. But I mean, I know a lot better cartoonists that are out there. Like
cartoonists who you like better.
Yeah, I guess, but it's just that I get this kind of amateurish kind of, you know, like ninth grade, I'm going to be a comic book artist feel to his art, you know,
and I
don't feel as if his art really grew as much as his writing and his story structure did from Box Office Poison.
Go look at the beginning of Box Office Poison.
Oh, it's rough. Yeah, I know.
But, yeah. You know, I think you just don't like that style, but I don't think it's any less skilled. I think if you look... He's got one thing he does really well is we've talked about before in black and white books, for example, how you can't tell people apart. And one thing that he does is he gives each of the characters a very strong appearance to go with their personality. And he's really good at drawing the people through their different phases in life. Like he draws the rock star guy, you know, as a young person, as an older person. He did that at the end of Box Office Poison where you got to see people later and you see little incarnations of them earlier. And there's a consistency between those that he always keeps. He's got that face, and you always know who you're looking at. And I think that there's a lot to that. And I think also if you look at the very beginning of Box Office Poison, you'll see really what looks like much more amateurish work.
Yeah, true. I mean, true, and you're right. I mean, and Lord knows I'm a fan of consistency, and I can appreciate and respect the consistency in look within the characters and things like that. But maybe it's just that cartoony versus comic book kind of subtle difference that, you know, kind of strikes a chord. But I think the story, you know, was enough to carry it. I mean, like I got to one point where I was, you know, about halfway through the book, and I just couldn't put it down. I would just go chapter after chapter after chapter, and it was like, you know, next thing I know, a half an hour has passed, and all I've been doing is reading.
I think that happened to me, too.
Here's where I bring the party down.
Again.
I liked it. I definitely enjoyed it, and I had the same thing you guys did, where I got to a certain point in the book where I couldn't stop reading it. But there's two things that really did a disservice to the book for me. One, Caprice was annoying in Box Office Poison, and she was annoying in this book. I didn't like her in either book. I don't want to see her ever again. Number two was that we discussed this when we first talked about Tricked in one of the early podcasts, how it's getting all these rave reviews. And just looking at the back of the book, one review says, the equivalent of a Robert Altman film, simultaneously engrossing and important. Another one says, every page I read, I kept thinking I should put the book down, save it, but I couldn't put it down. That's just crazy hyperbole.
it was better than
every
Cats.
Every page, save it, come on. That's the kind of thing, when I read that, I'm like, this better be good, and it was good, but it wasn't. I didn't want to savor every page.
I think that the Robert Altman comparison, though, is very
apt. That's apt,
apropos.
But it was the important, yeah, that, more labeling as important. It wasn't an important graphic novel.
I think
Persepolis
is an
important graphic novel. Mouse is an important graphic novel. Pedro Me is an important graphic novel. This was a good story about the people
I can put this on my shelf now as something, as another thing in my very small list of books that I could give to people who don't read comic books.
Does that make it important?
Yes. Because there aren't many of them. Because,
well, there's lots of them.
Listen, this is an incredibly fast, quickly shrinking entity, the comic book industry. And I think that part of the reason is that it's often so insular that there's not enough stuff for you to give people. I've given people Mouse, I've given people Pedro and Me, and then they go, oh, that's great, what else can I read? And I go, oh. Because
I would
they
give
don't want to read Crisis.
Poison way before Tricked.
Perhaps.
Really?
Yeah.
I think the width of the spine of Tricked would scare a lot of people off. And the same thing with Box Office Poison. It's a thick book. I mean, that's why, like,
I don't
know,
think
kind
that's
of
true.
Our...
Would they be scared off if you handed them Karamazov or
yes,
Stephen King?
Well, who are you talking about?
I was on the plane and some guy was reading Nelson DeMille or whatever. Who reads those books?
Lots more people read
those
comics.
Yeah, I know. I just think it's amazing that they have these books in the airport that they just people set by because they're there, and it's like.
But still, crap. I disagree with the important label, but that's smaller to the point where the fact that it was overly praised.
It's almost as if had you read it when it came out before the reviews came out, you might have had a more unbiased
That's hardly Robinson's fault.
It's not, right. But you can't discount it. It's there.
I would
it's
also
on the back
take,
page.
Well, they have to. They have to try to sell it. So you sell stuff.
And I'm saying
then
it
you're
hurts.
Having a problem with marketing,
well,
which we know you do, and I do, so that's fine. I'm going to take issue with your caprice.
She's annoying.
Your capricism. See, I don't see why you say that. In Box Office Poison, when she showed up, she to me was like, if you're in a relationship, was basically the idea was he was in a relationship with this girl who was a big jerk. And he wasn't really happy. And he meets this girl at a party who's not anything special. She's just like, she's cute. She's probably a little chubby. She's fun. They talk. They get along well. And she's the other. She's that thing that makes you go, God, she's – but she wasn't so great that he was like, oh, I'm falling in love with her. I have to move. And there's just a great tension. That's a wonderful thing. And to me, she's sort of an every girl. And I don't see an every girl very often in anything because she, she's a little overweight and she's normal basically.
She's every annoying girl that I've ever known.
And such rears the ugly head of the Connor Kilpatrick cold heart.
Cold-hearted bastard.
Cold-hearted bastard.
My heart is utilitarian.
It's pumping blood.
Pumping blood and absorbing cholesterol.
And alcohol.
Right. More the liver than anything, but... it's just, like, it's just overly dense. Like, everything about her, the fact that she's the every girl, she's the big girl with the heart of gold who needs love, too. And just, that's all I feel like I know about her. She's the doormat girl. She's, she's been treated badly. Give me something else. This is two humongous books now of the same thing.
Well then.
I told you I was bringing it down.
He kicks homeless beggars, by the way.
I do.
He walks down the street and they're like, I just need, I was in the war. I just need some quarters. Get away from me, you bum. Click, kick.
Jesus.
It's horrible.
It's awful.
Connor, you're a horrible person.
All right, so Tricked. So let's give it the iFanboy thumbs up, thumbs down. Did you like it? Didn't like
way
it?
Up.
End of the day. Way up for Josh. I give it thumbs up.
I liked it. It wasn't great.
This is how he talks about something. He's, at the end of the whole thing, he's like, well, not bad.
Well, I told you I had problems with
it, good.
But it was good, and I enjoyed the story. Well, I didn't love it, though.
When was the last time you read a better graphic novel? That's right.
Demo.
You really like that better?
Yeah.
Wow.
Hold
on a second. That sound you hear? That's me crossing you off my Christmas card list. Scratch, scratch, scratch. No, I like
just
Demo.
I don't love Alex Robinson as much as you do. It's something about
either, so
it's something about. Jesus, I didn't say I don't love your mom or something. It's just something about his storytelling style that rubs me the wrong
way. Dear Alex. Connor Kilpatrick of Brooklyn, New York.
You know what the ironic thing is? Box Office Poison,
anyway.
I probably I know Josh really connected to it, but on a purely literal level, I probably connect to it more than anybody. I mean, because the character lives in the neighborhood I live in, takes the subway I live in, I took the subway, the same one. I mean, it's just like all the stuff that I can literally relate to more than anyone probably.
It's like Alex Ross secretly like documented your life.
Alex Ross had nothing to do with it, which makes it...
I mean, Alex Robinson!
You know what? If Alex Ross had done the art...
By the way, by mentioning Alex Ross, we owe him $30. Just in case.
I'm short. I'm short this week. If something else cover me.
Yeah, Kirkman hasn't come through with his $10 yet.
Kirkman, you lout.
So that closes the book on Tricked. I think we all strongly recommend it. And if you haven't read it, go check it out. And
if you feel like something new, or you think that there's something that you know, that you could give to your friends to read who wouldn't go anywhere near, you know, Crisis on Infinite Earths.
If you want to hear more wine from Caprice.
I thought you liked it.
Well, now I'm just pushing your buttons.
But the thing is that you can like it and not like an aspect of it, or
right,
not like a character.
She's only one-fifth of the book.
Right, exactly. Like, I really liked the rock star. I liked his whole storyline and everything. I thought that was interesting and fun and cool and blah, blah, blah.
He was a hedonist.
Yes.
Well, yeah. Well, most.
And he was a casual hedonist too. He was like, cocaine, all right.
Two girls in bed with me. Okay.
Two girls, eight.
Oh yeah, that was great.
Cocaine, eight girls, whatever. Let's go for it.
But he found the love. So.
Moving on.
So speaking of finding the love, iFanboy has a lot of love with our readers and our listeners. That was an awkward segue. It was bad. I'm working on it. But we actually had a huge week for the Frapper map. We had how many? 14 people
since the last podcast. That's two a day.
But if I didn't know, what is the Frapper map?
The Frapper map is a place where if you're a listener of the podcast or reader of iFanboy.com, you can come and push a little push pin and be counted. Stand up and say, I like iFanboy. You could be like Lindsay in Rochester who hearts iFanboy. Ooh. Or you could be like... Vertical from Royal Oak, Michigan, who listens to the podcast every week and looks to be about 2 years old.
That's a
and you could also take the opportunity, like George Kelly Johnson, to tell us that Blankets is a great graphic novel from Denton, Texas.
Why do I have a feeling that's like a I said something about it and he's refuting me?
Yeah, well, he says Blankets is a great graphic novel and sticking his tongue out. But then again, his picture is him with a Dr. Pepper case box on his head. So,
what does he know, really? He can't read through that box.
What does he know? Yeah.
This bit of the page looks good. Flip, flip.
But and if you remember from our last podcast, we were commenting about our line in the sand down the Mississippi and how we challenge anybody west of the Mississippi but east of California to stand up and be counted. And Drew in Gilbert, Arizona, and Justin in Pittsburgh, Kansas, stood up and said that, hey, we're in between California and the Mississippi.
What we're seeing now is a new effect, though. If you go to the map, now you can
see very scientific,
as we get around the Midwest
States area,
as we in the U.S. because that's the one that really matters. I didn't mean that. That was ironic, but I came out as just sounding like an imperialist.
We've got all the bombs, you know.
We have lots of them. Anyway, you can see there's sort of a magnetic repulsion going on from somewhere, either in the Dakotas or Montana, or possibly the entire country of Canada.
I think it might be the Canada effect, I think, actually. But
it's like one of those storms that comes out of Canada.
The pins are literally curling away.
They're curling away from Minnesota and South Dakota and North Dakota.
Yeah.
What part of the country is that? Because is that the Midwest?
That's the plains.
It's the plains, the upper...
The plains? Because it's plain?
No, there are plains.
Oh, hurtful.
Mean.
But so we're gonna amend our challenge, and then if you live in any of the Dakotas, Minnesota, Montana,
you know
Wyoming,
West Dakota,
it's Indians.
Oh,
it's Indian country.
Well, then we should add gambling to our site.
They're too busy playing the slots and not downloading the podcasts.
They don't play the slots.
Oh well, maintaining the slots.
They set up the slots for your gaming enjoyment.
We'd also want to, you know, not just folks in the U.S., Zoe in Scotland. And,
yes.
Nobody knows.
Syme in Melbourne, Australia.
And we actually, Adam in Morton, Illinois, sent us an email, actually, guys, as well as going to the Frapper Map.
There you go.
He's in high school.
Many,
Josh.
Many. It appears that my idea about there being no teenage comic book readers has been greatly refuted by a lot of the users of iFanboy.
Exactly.
But by the way,
I wouldn't
have guessed that a lot of them were teenagers, because we get a lot of very intelligent posts from people who would seem too young to be able to be intelligent.
But yeah, well, so good on you, kids. You know, you're studying. It's good. But Adam, who posts on the site as Thunderbird, had a question that he's been reading comics for about 3 years and that he only reads Marvel.
You've given away his secret identity.
He's never picked up a single DC book or Image or anything, and he wants to know if we can convince him to read any books that don't belong to the mighty Marvel family.
Why this senseless lining up on company lines? Why this hatred, this prejudice? Well, sorry, I don't know what happened there. But
it is a weird phenomenon, don't you think?
It is because we talked about it before, how I'm a Marvel guy and Connor's a DC guy, and
I like good comics.
All right, and you rise above everything, but still, it's a weird thing. But I guess our advice to Adam would be to download every other podcast and listen to it. And every time we talk about what comics people should read, we mention Invincible.
It's true.
By Robert Kirkman.
We're not fooling around with that either.
Yeah, pick that up. And Kirkman writes for Marvel, so there's a little. It's like a cousin book. How about that?
It's not as drastic, because he's already probably sampled some of his work.
And Kirkman owes us $30.
Now it's just a straight debt.
Exactly.
You'll be at a con somewhere, you're like, wait a minute, that guy owes me $30. Hey, hey!
You can see Ron run by and just tackle him out of nowhere.
Exactly. And sit on him until he gives up the money.
Give it up! There's nothing like the off-camera tackle, by the way.
Exactly.
Best shot great. In all of video.
It's fantastic.
Maybe one of
so,
those.
So Adam, or Thunderbird, as you like to be called.
You know what's funny about Invincible is we've never picked it as a pick of the week.
We buy it in trades.
That is an interesting phenomenon. We all buy it in trade.
That's weird.
I couldn't read it in a single issue, by the way.
I've been meaning to get to the, because I prefer single issues over the trades, and I've been meaning to catch up and buy the back issues, but I just haven't. I've been lazy, so I just buy the trades.
I agree with Josh. There's no way you could read that. I could enjoy reading that book singly.
Interesting, but thousands of people do.
I bet more thousands buy it and trade.
Not possibly. So regardless.
What about DC books? Are there any DC books?
DC's kind of tough right now.
It's all changing. Next month they're all going to be different. So if you want to read DC books next month, just jump in, sample a few, because they're all starting. They're all basically being rebooted.
Or give us a little time, and we'll tell you.
Yeah. Or if you want to just go with a sure thing, go to buy the trade paperbacks of The Flash by Mark Waid Jeff Johns.
Go buy JLA by Grant Morrison.
Yeah, buy the JLA Volume 1 by Grant Morrison. Buy that one. Definitely.
I think that's still maybe the best DC story in the last 10 years.
That book, I just read it again recently, and it just kicks my ass every time.
Yeah. I reread that, and then I reread The Authority, and it doesn't hold up as well.
Yeah.
Which one?
Yeah,
which
one? The Authority, right?
The Authority doesn't hold up as well as the JLA.
I don't want to ruin it for Adam, because he's going to go out and buy the trade paperback and then tell us what he thought of it after this. But that one moment in the third or fourth issue of Batman just still to this day has been like, damn. So
that was a great book.
Adam, that is your homework assignment, that you need to go out and buy JLA Volume 1.
Why do you got to talk down to him like that?
I'm not talking down to him.
That's
he just
your
asked
homework
the
assignment after you finish your oatmeal.
Hey, we had to retract.
You like
just
it!
Just because we're not the only ones who have to read books here. Everybody else has to read the books, too. So
we're not alone in this.
We're not alone. iFanboy is a what's the word I'm looking for?
We're a reading group, really.
Yeah, it's really just
it's like
a book
Oprah's
club.
Book club.
A study circle.
Yeah. And next week we'll be doing the Regents Math 2. So, anyway.
You know, not everyone is from New York.
I keep forgetting that. I'm sorry. So if you have a question for us, you can shoot us an email, contact@ifanboy.com. And if you want to stand up and be counted, and if you live in North Dakota, South Dakota, or Montana, or Minnesota, go to the Frapper Map.
Or South America and Africa. We'd like to hit all of the inhabited
continents. I'd love to
continents.
Hit in Africa.
Yeah. So go to ifanboy.com. In the upper right-hand corner, there's a link to our Frapper map, or you can go to Frapper, FRAPPR.com/ifanboy.
You tried to do it again, didn't you? Yeah, he wants to spell it Farper.
This show is
FR. Frapper with no E, .com. So I think that wraps it up for another week, guys.
Thank God.
It's a big sigh. You're like, there's a wind blowing in over with Ron.
It's like birthing a giant this week.
It really
by
is.
By the way, just to take comedy apart, the word birthing is what made that funny.
There you go. Taking a comedy apart, making it no longer funny.
I know, I really did. I sucked the energy out of it. Alright. Ready?
Okay.
5, 4,
get
three.
This Doom show on the road.
I'm three. Doing the countdown.
This episode is brought to you by BetterHelp. How's your social battery doing right now? I've never used that phrase, but I instantly know what it means, and I think it's interesting because it works two different ways. Some people need to have their social battery charged, and they this is the introvert-extrovert thing, and some people, you know, like, they've got enough energy for other people, but then it's time to sort of step away, and, you know, as we get to this part where winter is ending, which, again, it's opposite. I love winter. I don't need it to end. You know, you start getting together with more people, and it can be a little draining on top of every other thing that we all have going on in our lives. I just assume everybody's overburdened because I think everybody's overburdened. But it can be tough to deal with. And also, like, one of the things is, like, you can't necessarily understand why you feel that way or why it's making you tired, but it's a real thing. If you think that you could use some help with it, if you could figure out a way to make things better, therapy is a great way to help. It can give you that kind of self-awareness to know how to ride that level just right so that you feel good, you feel right. If you're thinking of starting therapy, you can give BetterHelp a try. It is entirely online. It is designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule, which is, again, we've been talking about being busy, right? You got to fit that in. You got a lunch period. You can do it during that time, whichever. That's possible. You fill out a brief questionnaire and get matched with a licensed therapist. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. I like that. There is no penalty for finding the person who is right for you. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. Get 10% off of your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.